All of the newest episodes of Note to Self are now available on the Luminary podcast app. It's free to download, and you can also listen to other podcasts from WNYC studios like Radiolab, Two Dope Queens, Snap Judgment, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, and others. Luminary Premium is the only place where you can enjoy the entire new season of Note to Self, plus new original podcasts you won't find anywhere else, from Trevor Noah, Roxane Gay, Guy Raz, Lena Dunham, and many more. And you can enjoy them ad-free. Start your free trial by going to luminary.link/note to self or download the Luminary app for free.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is New Tech City, WNYC's weekly look at how technology is changing the way we live. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. The word hacking is reminding me of Jekyll and Hyde these days. Stick with me. The evil Hyde is a computer geek who hacks into systems and causes havoc. Jekyll, on the other hand, is more productive. He's a programmer who goes to hackathons to quickly turn out new and useful software in the hopes of making the world a better place. There are a lot more Jekylls out there these days, going to some very civic-minded hackathons, hacking in the hopes of improving the way our city works. Our own Ilya Meritz joined one event aimed at improving local government regulation. His task? Work with a team of strangers to try and solve a city's problem, all in about 5 hours.
It's audacious, this notion that a group of talented amateurs could come up with better ideas for solving a problem than the people who deal with that problem every day.
We have over a quarter of our residents living in poverty.
People like Elizabeth Reynoso, director of food policy for the city of Newark.
And we are looking at increasing real food access for all of our residents, regardless of their income or geography.
It's a Saturday, we're in a big loft space in Chelsea, and there is lots of food accessible here. Coffee, bagels, pizza. It's a design challenge hosted by NYU's Wagner School of Public Service. There are three groups tackling three challenges. Reynoso is here to present the problem of price gouging. It seems that in many stores, the cost of basic goods like milk and cereal tends to rise at the start of the month. That's also the time when a quarter of all Newarkers get food stamps and have money to spend.
What we're seeing is in that some corner stores and supermarkets that prices are rising just at the time when they know that residents have to buy groceries.
Do you expect to hear ideas today that you will take back to Mayor Booker?
Definitely.
Okay, so meet the group that's going to be giving advice to Newark Mayor Cory Booker.
My name is Arno Sayugi. I'm a product manager for Google.org. Since I am a very curious person by nature, that's why I'm here.
My name is Nathan Story. I just started a full-time job at a tech startup that does urban informatics.
We also have someone who does mapping for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, a guy who designs software for green homes, a policy analyst for New York City Council, an attorney, and a web designer for MTV. Also, yours truly. Few of us have used food stamps. None of us has lived in Newark.
I mean, do they have smartphones? I would argue that maybe most of them have.
Soon we're batting around ideas like an eight-person game of ping pong. How about a system for measuring this price inflation, maybe through crowdsourcing? Of course, a lot of bodegas don't itemize on their receipts, so that might not be so easy. People here speak a common language with words like incentives, awareness, data, scalability. And we pretty much get along, despite the time pressure.
Oh, we only have 15 minutes. Oh, God. Okay.
5-0?
5-0.
I can't say exactly how it happens or take much credit, but my teammates buckle down and put on an amazing slideshow. Our proposal is to develop a free smartphone app for Newarkers to record prices. That information would then be used to inform residents while shaming the owners of stores that inflate those prices. We offer ideas, but no software, and our group wins the Design Challenge's Technology Award. And soon we're drinking wine out of plastic glasses. But what exactly was accomplished? A few weeks later, I call Elizabeth Reynoso. She puts me on the phone with Mayor Booker's technology advisor, Seth Wehner. He likes the idea a lot, but he says,
would be inaccurate to say that in 2 months from now we're going to have a prototype in the field.
For one thing, Wehner points out, our group didn't actually build the app that we proposed, so that will take time and money. For another, Newark needs partner organizations to do outreach to food stamp recipients to build a campaign.
So until some of those hands are willing to say, yeah, this is a good idea, I'm willing to commit my four staff who meet with, you know, six families a day to try this type of approach and let's see where it goes, then that's exactly what I'm saying is the main linchpin here.
Wehner says there are several foundations funding civic technology projects, and he hopes to get a grant application out soon. For WNYC, I'm Ilya Meritz.
So that was one journalist's adventures in hacking. And if you've ever been to a hackathon, we want to know about your experience and what ended up happening to your big idea. Go to newtechcity.org and fill out our hackathon survey. We wanted to find out what the organizations funding a lot of these civic-minded hackathons are actually hoping to accomplish. So we got in touch with the Knight Foundation, one organization that's been funding numerous so-called challenges in journalism. They're asking innovators to figure out how to make public information more relevant and useful. Michael Manis is VP for Journalism and Media there.
The Knight Foundation seeks to create informed and engaged communities across the United States. One of the reasons that happened is the Knight Foundation came from the Knight brothers, who were at one time the largest newspaper owners in the United States. So their legacy is about making sure that communities stay informed and that they are civically engaged with what's going on in their area.
So it started out as being sort of a family of journalists. And how did that translate into what you're doing now, which is funding a lot of these hackathons and challenges, as you call them? Has the role of journalism changed?
Yeah, I think what we saw and why it shifted is, you know, with the digital disruption that occurred, with any disruption, right, there's positive or negative actions on it. So we know that there's been a big impact on the amount of working journalists in the United States. We're around about 1978 levels, I believe, in terms of the amount of newspaper journalists working. And there's other things like that going on with the industry. And what we saw was that there wasn't a lot of experimentation or embrace of the potential of what we saw that the internet provided or that digital platforms enabled. And so a lot of our work around this is trying to help chart what new directions are happening in journalism and making sure that people who are really good at building new things think about issues of free speech and ways to make journalism more efficient or to make it more available for a citizen to engage in journalistic practices. And the whole goal the entire time was to make sure that really quality journalism is happening.
Okay, so hackathons, like, do you call them hackathons, these projects?
We do call them hackathons. We do various different types of things. So a lot of the hackathons we'll do around journalism. So taking people who have ideas about, you know, we have a mixture of developers, of journalists, of, you know, what used to be called computer system reporters, or people who are really good at databases. We have those people get together, and the idea is to create those engineered collisions where people from different points of view come together, but ultimately it's to make sure that there is information that's happening in journalism that in things that happen that make journalism tools better, more accessible, think about it in new ways. But we broadly define, you know, journalism in a way that we want to make sure that we think great, again, that, you know, a really good database that's interactive is great journalism.
But it almost sounds like you're trying to make sure that journalism stays in the role that it used to have as sort of a government watchdog and less sort of trying to get as many listicles and traffic as possible.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is we did, one of the things that we've grown up with is it was an industry that enabled a lot of investigative reporting to happen because of the ability to, they had enough revenue to do that, they had enough ability, had enough bodies to allow a journalist to take time to devote around doing deep investigative reporting that might take months and months before everything was ever reported. And so some of those activities are just not going to be, we know that it's already been in a shrunken newsroom that those things aren't occurring as much. In an industry that's been disrupted, those things aren't occurring as much. So one of our goals is to make sure that type of vibrancy is maintained. But also I would say the other side of that is to keep pushing, the things that make journalism important into new platforms and into new areas.
So that's journalism, but just in general, do you feel like this idea of hackathons becoming more civically minded is something new and something that you're seeing growing? Is that simply because of budget cuts and because hackers are realizing that if they don't take control of certain things going on in the public sphere, they just won't happen?
I think it's kind of a combination of all of those. You have a lot of different pressure points on this that's happening. The first is that, you know, the internet and databases, the internet and the databases it enables in many ways are brand new, right? So this is the first time that you can have direct involvement from a democracy standpoint, thanks to technology. So that's one thing that, again, this disruption that's happened. To your point, there is a drop-off on a lot of things that have occurred. And there's a real sense from, I think, the hacker community that we're moving into an era that's post-institutional. What are the things that we can build that citizens can use? What kind of open source software can we put out there that, you know, that a government employee could use to make their job easier, to lower the barriers of entry with citizens? We've seen a lot of this, you know, the hackathons and civic things happen because there's been an elected leader who sees the potential of technology helping them govern and engage with citizens and also, be more effective around their leadership. And so there's a lot of different levels that's coming from where you have, you know, either the leadership area, that the technology itself, or that hackers see the opportunity to build stuff that sits outside any of those institutions.
Michael Manis of the Knight Foundation, thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So that's hacking for good, but what about the evil side of hacking? When unseen criminals want to get into our computers and the dozens of accounts that we've created online. Rebecca Greenfield writes about tech for the Atlantic Wire, and she recently wrote about the future of the password. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi.
So, Rebecca, I feel like passwords irritate me to no end. I either can't remember them or I break the golden rule, security rule, and I use like one password for all my accounts. Please tell me that this madness is about to end and that the traditional password is almost over.
It's actually only going to get worse.
No!
If those are your problems. It's very easy to hack somebody who uses the same password over and over. And the password's going to live on for the foreseeable future.
But I feel like we've been hearing about retina scans, or there's this rumor that the new iPhone is going to have a fingerprint scan on it. Can't we just get rid of this password and just use biometrics?
So basically, the password is going to be the baseline way of getting into any technology. And then on top of that, for more secure things, yeah, you might want to have another way of identifying yourself.
Now, you wrote about a really weird concept that's being tested out at Google. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah. So Google is asking people to use funny faces to get into their phones.
So what you would do is basically you'd have your regular written password. That's the first step. And then the second step would be making a, like, funny face?
Yeah. It's so that you can prove that you're you and not a picture of you.
I also read about a ring that you would wear.
That's like making a key, like a physical key. And a lot of government employees have that, where it's like a thing you stick into your computer and that's you. And the benefit of that is that it's, unless you steal it, it's impossible to copy. Like a hacker in another country can't get the physical key from you.
I don't know. That seems like a good, what if you could just, each of us could have our own key and that it would just have all of our passwords already preloaded onto it, or a ring like that?
I mean,
that.
Then the problem is what if you lose it, or what if it gets stolen?
Oh, yeah.
Every password has its problem. Even, I mean, do you have two-factor verification? I mean, everybody should use it. It's a little bit annoying, though, and that's the future of passwords.
Rebecca Greenfield covers tech for the Atlantic Wire. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you just heard Rebecca say that every password has a problem. And we recently learned that even the NSA has a problem with protecting its security. It's someone named Edward Snowden. He revealed that the U.S. government has been asking some big names in tech, including Google and Facebook, for access to users' private info. I recently went on WNYC's Money Talking Show to discuss with business editor Charlie Herman and Time Magazine's Rana Faruhar if this is just the latest reason why the tech industry is starting to get a bad reputation.
Rana, you've written some recent stories actually with headlines like Learning to Hate Big Tech, and it's official. Tech has replaced banking as the new corporate bad guy. I presume this isn't just about Edward Snowden and the NSA leak. Why do you
not.
Think this?
And let me just say that, like Congress, I love my Apple products, but No, I think that, look, for starters, big tech is where the money is right now. And where the money is, more government scrutiny will follow. And we're seeing some of the privacy fallout that a lot of people have been predicting for a while now. You know, I've always thought that, yes, people are comfortable giving up a lot of privacy, but we've never had a privacy Exxon Valdez, if you will. Now, I don't know if Snowden is that, but I think the fact that he continues to be in the headlines week after week is really making people aware of just how much they're giving up and how much information and power big tech holds.
But it's not just the information that people are providing to these tech companies. It's the way that they actually do business that you think is a bigger issue.
That's right. I've written a lot about technology companies and their tax avoidance schemes. We've all heard about what's happened with Apple, but a lot of tech companies and banks, to be fair, do this. Those are the two industries that are most able to move value and revenue and profits abroad and to use tax havens abroad because of the way the intellectual property works. It's very easy to say create something or design something, if you will, from the latest Apple ads in Cupertino and move the value to Singapore or to the Netherlands and to avoid taxes. So I think this is going to keep being an issue not only in the U.S., but the entire G8 is going to make this an issue. You know, you've got governments with beleaguered public budgets. You've got companies that are avoiding taxes and have a lot of cash on the balance sheet, and that is a recipe for conflict.
Well, Manoush, I don't mean to, like, put you on the spot as to defend the industry, but is that actually accurate what Ron is saying? I mean, because the reality is that we can't live without, whether it's the gadgets in our hands. You see people, you know, here in New York constantly looking down on their phone in the subway or walking in the street, to the fact that this is just the world that we live in now, where it is data and being online. I mean, that's how we sort of do everything. It's kind of, you just have to accept it.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is a maturation of the industry, essentially, right? Whereas before it was like, oh, look at this cool new gadget. Well, now we are literally seeing that technology is interwoven into every single part of our life. And so it's bound to happen that there's a sort of collision between legislation and these companies. And so until they can sort of figure themselves out, there's going to be this sort of jostling. You know, no one can condone avoiding paying taxes. But on the other hand, there are a lot of people, you'll never hear somebody saying, oh, I went into banking because I wanted to make the world a better place. Or if you have, I haven't heard it. But you will hear an entrepreneur talking about this sense of working for the greater good. So here's how one entrepreneur recently described his work at New York Tech Meetup the other day. His startup is called Fund Elevator.
We're lucky. We're in a good space where we're trying to make the world a better place, as corny as that sounds.
So you're really arguing that people go into this with the best of intentions. So even if there are other issues that may come up along the line, they really are trying to change the world. And maybe we should cut them some slack, even if in the end they're not paying their taxes, not paying people very well overseas, you know, providing all of our information.
Well, this brings up a very important point. I actually agree that, you know, in the past, tech has been looked on with a lot of generosity and kindness because it creates jobs. It creates cool new products. Now, that right. jobs question is going to be very, very important. How many jobs are these companies creating and where are they? And so far, they've been very much at the top. You know, there's a lot of PhDs, very well-paid engineers in California, and at the bottom, right, at Foxconn workers in China or in other parts of Southeast Asia. Are they creating enough in the middle? And I think what's interesting is after Apple had its big tax fiasco, it came out with a study saying, oh, we've created over 500,000 jobs in the U.S. And, you know, you can splice and dice that study in different ways, but this jobs question is going to be crucial for tech defending itself going forward.
And just to add to that, I think what we're seeing is that every industry now has a tech element.
Manoush, this concept of I'm doing good working at my company, is that maybe one of the reasons why people are becoming more critical of the tech sector, this sense of superiority of what we're doing is vastly more important than whatever it is you're doing in your finance sector or maybe in your journalism job?
All the smugness of it all. I just wonder if it's kind of us old people who are like, you work because it's a job and you earn your money, you bring home the bacon, you know, right? And a lot of these people are young and don't have a lot of economic obligations yet at home, but they have the technical and engineering skills and therefore they can have a little bit naivete and desire for social betterment.
But I think there also is a certain arrogance in the industry. I mean, you know, the New Yorker piece by George Packer really, a few weeks ago really got at that. You know, this idea that the folks in this ecosystem are kind of at zero gravity. You know, they're in a different world than everyone else and really believe that their concerns should predominate.
Thanks so much for listening. And while you're here on iTunes, go on over and check out Money Talking. And for you hackers out there, don't forget to go to newtechcity.org and fill out our hackathon survey. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and this is New Tech City from WNYC.